Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Weird Blood by Donna Augustine, narrated by Nicole Poole. Prologue. Brief History of the World. In 1620 BC, before the change, magic sprang into existence. No one knew why or how this occurred, as there had never been magic in the world before. Some speculated that it was because of the dual eclipse of the moons. Others said it was because the planet shifted on its axis. But no one had any logical theories on why some people were gifted with magic and others were not, or why magic would skip several generations. The only thing that was brutally obvious to all was that magic was power, and this was the beginning of a new world. By 391 AC, after the change, people gifted with magic had taken control of every country in the land. The power structure had shifted and righted itself to this magical reign, and a new normal had taken shape. The Weird Blood, as those with magic in their veins were sometimes called, were hoarded as commodities by their stronger brethren. They were kept in gilded cages, bred for more magic, more power. But even as people found their footing in this new world, no one realized what world they'd soon be living in once the magical war of 810 began. Because those with the thirst for power are seldom satisfied until they have it all. Chapter 1. 910 AC. Riker stood leaning beside the open door, his face silhouetted by the full moon shining behind him. I didn't need to see his eyes to feel the burn of their stare. The same night breeze that ruffled his dark hair caressed my skin, taunting me with a hint of freedom. It was a stark contrast to the cold stone wall at my back as I sat in the windowless room. The world unfolded 10 feet away, yet I didn't have any hope of reaching it because of one wrong decision. Wasn't that the way of it, though? A single misstep and everything crumbled around you. Safety, permanency. They were the grand illusions we all tried to partake in. Eventually, though, the truth would shine its harsh light on our endless vulnerabilities. That was when the true survivors stood, while the weak crawled into the shadows. I wouldn't be among the weak. I forced the fear down into a dark pit within, as I had so many times before in my life. The regrets were harder to swallow back, but I did, knowing he was searching for weakness. I wouldn't give this man a crumb. He already had too much power, and I wouldn't take part in any illusion of my defeat. I wasn't finished yet, not by a magic mile. He crossed his arms in front of his chest, his white shirt pulled tight over broad shoulders as he made himself more comfortable. I sat stiff as a board, afraid to reveal anything while we sized each other up in the darkened silence.
"How many days are you going to sit here?"
He raised his hand, mocking me as he made a show of counting his fingers.
"Going to need the second hand soon."
I didn't laugh at his crude joke. Didn't scowl either. I'd figure a way out of this mess and then we'd see who was gloating. He didn't like me, and I didn't like him either, so at least in that we were on an even playing field. His hand dropped.
"You must realize this is a waste of time."
His tone was that of a person who thought they had all the control. I said nothing, as I had for the last 4 nights he'd come, my insides charring from restrained anger. He turned his head, his hawkish profile partially revealed in moonlight. He smiled, and it added a chill to the already cold room.
"What if I tire of this game and kill you? Aren't you afraid to die?"
I was already dying. Probably that much quicker, too, in this hole. I quickly blocked the thought as his magic reached out. I tried my best to keep up my defenses as his magic swirled in the air and filled the room, testing me, surrounding me, trying to find my weaknesses as it attempted to lure me into letting down my defenses. He might beat me eventually. He was strong, stronger than anyone I'd ever met. But if this was my time to cross the Styx into the forever night, I was going with a fight. I'd die here if need be. That was the craziest part of knowing you were dying. It trimmed off all the should-haves and cut you right down to your essence. It was a gift of freedom, cursed with a lack of time. It made you think back to everything you'd done, every decision, every word, and see it in that harsh light. Some actions shone and some cast a dark shadow on your timeline. He crossed his arms in front of him, his forearms rippling.
You're going to give me what I want.
I shrugged, a silent, think whatever you want, time will tell. I tilted my head back, looking at the ceiling. Are we finished for tonight? He let out a short laugh that, unlike the smile, sounded genuine.
I'll leave you to your amusements until tomorrow.
He walked out and shut the door to the empty room, while I shined that harsh light back over the last week of my life, and the regrets flooded back to the surface. Chapter 2. 8 days earlier. A hand gripped my shoulder and a surge of energy shot to the area before I could stop it. The hand was gone, followed by a string of,
God's fucking magic, fucker!
My eyes slanted open to Ruck, shaking the singed hand in the air. He said it was similar to a burning feeling, but it felt like more of a zap of energy on my end.
Sorry.
I'd long ago stopped trying to explain how it was an automatic reflex when I was startled. Ruck had heard it too many times before to bother repeating. I pushed off my pelt on the floor and glanced through the gaping hole in the wall that had once probably held a window, as the rest of the holes probably had. The moon still hung in the sky.
What's up?
Ruck stared at his hand, so whatever reason he had to wake me, he didn't deem it as important as the throbbing.
I hate that I'm the only one who can wake you up.
His tone didn't have much heat, though, and most of the anger ebbed with the sting. I keep telling you to poke me with a stick or something. I pointed to the corner where I'd left a stick handy. I knew why he didn't do it, whether he'd admit it or not. He thought maybe if he got zapped by my magic enough, some of it might seep into him. Wanting to be weird blood was like asking for someone to stamp a price tag on your hide. That didn't seem to stop some from trying.
What's up?
I repeated, knowing there had to be some reason he was waking me, when it was his least favorite thing to do.
Riley is here, wants to talk to you.
I flopped back down onto the pelt, the floor a little harder underneath than I would have liked. I kept forgetting that I'd given Mara one of my pelts. Just because he runs his crew at night doesn't mean he can't communicate during the day. Did he say what he wanted?
He's not giving details, but I don't think he wants anyone to know he's here. He came alone.
My attention jerked back to Ruck as if he'd grabbed my chin. Alone? Why the hell would he come alone? The questions must have been written all over me because he nodded as if to say, yeah, you probably want to find out what this is about. I'll be down in 2 minutes. I stood back up and rummaged through the small pile of clothes I had in the corner, looking for something warmer to throw over my shirt. Ruck left me alone as I fumbled in the dark until I grabbed the sweater out of the pile. It was my best one, with only a few tears here and there. I threw it on and halted for a moment as a pain in my chest, right where the mysterious bruise had formed, nearly brought me crashing to the floor. I took a few short breaths, let the worst subside, and shook it off. Whatever was wrong with me, it was getting worse, but I couldn't worry about it now. I made my way through the dark maze of hallways, one of the reasons this building was such an asset. Anyone who managed to get in wouldn't get out so easily. My guess was that over the years and many incidents, the place had been reconstructed so many times that it had become a hodgepodge made just for me and my crew. I made my way downstairs to the second floor, knowing exactly where Riley would be waiting. Didn't matter that we'd been doing deals with Riley for a few years now. You only needed to get sloppy once to end up dead. And most people only died once. Although I'd heard of a few weird blood that had been killed a few times before they stayed dead. I didn't feel like finding out if I had more than one run in me tonight. Riley was perched on a window ledge when I walked in. Blonde hair so light, he looked nearly albino. He was tall but lanky, like most of us struggling to survive in the ruined city.
What's going on, Riley?
Riley wasn't his real name, but then again, mine wasn't really Bugs. No one used their birth names in the ruined city. Most of us hadn't ended up here by accident. He turned from where he'd been looking out. His dark eyes, striking against so much paleness, skimmed my form in a way that made me wish I'd had more than one sweater on. Not that he'd crossed that line. He stood, a flirting smile on his face.
Hi, Angel.
Riley was the only one that ever called me that. He said when he'd first seen me, I'd looked like an angel, with hair the color of sunshine and eyes that reminded him of sunny blue skies. That was the day I started taking dirt baths, but he'd kept up with the name. What do you want? There was no patience for sweet-talking when you woke me in the middle of the night.
I'm here to do you a favor.
If this was a favor, it would be the first he'd ever done me. Barter? Yes, that he would do all day long, but no one did favors. Not for another crew, anyway. What would this favor be? I asked instead of why. Why implied that it was something of value he might be offering. I couldn't afford any debts. His lips stayed sealed as his eyes shot to the door. Riley had a healthy dose of paranoia. It was probably what had kept him alive this long and made him the leader of his crew. No one's listening. Except for Rock, but I would have repeated everything to him anyway.
There's word people are asking around for a weird blood in the city.
Weird blood. A carrier. Gifted. Marked. Cursed. There were all sorts of names for those that carried magic in their veins, and the word you chose depended on the way you viewed it. Riley had hinted around in the past, trying to figure out if there was a weird blood in my crew, but I'd ignored him. There were only two people who did know for sure I was weird blood, one of whom was Ruck. I trusted him with my life. The other, well, she didn't have a reason to betray me, or I didn't think she did. If you carried more than a drop of magic in your blood, you became the hunted. The lords and ladies, kings and queens of the countries would torture anyone they crossed in order to get information. Magic was power, and when you were always on the cusp of war, you needed as much power as you could get. Riley was going to take people poking around as a confirmation that he was right. That would be an inconvenience, but it looked as if I might have bigger problems now. Riley could be bought. I was afraid of who would be the highest bidder. So, what's that got to do with me? I shrugged even as the blood drained from my legs to shoot straight to a thumping heart. He crooked an eyebrow. Riley wasn't running his own crew because he was stupid.
I figured that information might be useful to you.
Did I fess up and try to pay him off now? But with what? We'd barely made it out of the winter. There was nothing left. It isn't. Was there anything else? What I really wanted to know was, who was asking and did they actually know?
Just watch your back. I've heard Riker's name being whispered as possibly being behind it.
I was wrong. I hadn't wanted to know. Riker. Everyone knew that name and stayed far away from anything to do with him or his lands. For as long as I'd lived here, I'd heard the rumors of a man named Riker and of the Valley, the country he ran. Now there was a weird blood who was strong enough to not have to hide. But like the other weird blood with great power, he'd become the predator.
There's benefits to our crews joining,
he said, only a couple of feet from me. I knew which joining he really wanted, and I wasn't interested in either. Plus, he was crazy. If our two crews joined, we'd become a target. Too many people meant too much attention, and I'd already been born with a mark on my back. I held my ground. No.
Why are you like that? Don't you like men? Or women?
He threw his hands up as if he couldn't figure me out.
Or anyone?
I knew that in this bleak land with so little solace, people wondered why I was never with anyone. They could keep wondering. Thank you for the information. A cold politeness infused my words. I walked out of the room and didn't need to look back to know Ruck would make sure Riley left. I knew after that talk, catching some sleep would be akin to trying to catch my shadow. I climbed my way up to the roof, letting a harsh breeze sting my cheeks as I watched Riley walk away in the night. It didn't matter who was looking for me. I was free. So why did I feel like there was a noose tightening around my neck? It didn't take long for Ruck to find me. He walked over and stopped beside me, staring off in the same general vicinity. If I asked him what he was watching, I doubt he'd know. We stood there for a few minutes before I ripped the scab off. "I'll figure it out." He nodded as he bit at the inside of his cheek and his eyes said what he didn't want to voice. "I will figure it out. I always do."
"Okay."
He said it like someone who didn't think it would be, though. Chapter 3. A sleety mix pelted me as winter refused to relinquish its grip to spring, and I pulled my coat closer around me. I dodged the worst of the mud puddles as I made my way down the abandoned main drag of the ruined city. It was a quiet morning and the locals were lying low, moving to the farthest outskirts, afraid they'd be pulled into the next war if they were seen by the strongest weird blood. The current rulers regularly searched for more bodies to fight their wars, as if we needed any more wars. Riley's warning had only made the suspicion churning in my gut turn into a boulder, but clearly I wasn't the only one who felt it. Trouble was brewing again, as it so often did. More fighting, more destruction, more death. The remnants of what had once probably been works of architectural beauty, the scars of those very wars, loomed on either side. Like a beautiful woman, the bone structure was still there even as the exterior weathered, every year taking its price. And just like the beautiful woman who would eventually be laid to rest, these buildings would be nothing but mounds of debris. Future generations wouldn't even know what beauty had once existed. It was for the best. No one would know the heritage they'd lost. Everyone would dream of the future, thinking the best was on the horizon, and not know it lay crumbled in the shadows of the past. It was only another handful of ruins before the crowning jewel of the city stood before me. This building, far from its prime, had fared better than the others. I wondered if the mason who had laid this brick were alive, would he feel any pride in his creation weathering the downfall of humanity? A girl who appeared close to my age, maybe just nearing 20 or so, leaned in the threshold, marring the one good thing left in this city. She slumped as if she didn't have the energy to hold up her thin frame. Dark shadows haunted her face, and a dope stick hung from her lips. Her lids at half-mast made it obvious it wasn't her first chew of the day, maybe not even her second. I wasn't a fan of them, as so many others were, but I didn't dare judge. When your grumbling stomach turned to cramping and you couldn't feel your toes through the numb, it was understandable how so many people took whatever relief they could get. I stepped up to the door, focusing more on the chipping cement behind her head so I wouldn't have to see the depths of despair that loomed in empty eyes. "Loretta in?" The nod toward inside seemed to cost her undue effort. I squeezed by, careful not to come in contact with her. It was said that people on the stick could spread their bleakness to you with just a touch. It was probably why Loretta often had one in her entrances. I walked past a room on my right, nodding briefly to two of Loretta's crew. There was a nod in return, as they paused their private conversation. They were part of Loretta's collection crew. From the looks on their faces, I'd hate to be the person who had taken a loan and not paid up today. I hurried past, not wanting to hear the name of the poor sap they'd be going for later on today, any more than they wanted me to hear it. I made my way up the stairs, skipping over the third step and then the eighth, both of which hadn't been repaired on purpose to deter uninvited guests. Unlike the ravaged first floor, the second floor had the look of life about it, with a rug that still retained some of its red, and even had a few stray strings adorning the ends. I walked over it toward the room that Loretta used as her office, all while wondering what that rug had cost someone. Loretta, the only other person who knew I was weird blood, because she was one herself. There was a saying that blood always knew blood, and it was true. I could feel her magic as soon as I walked into the room, and I knew she felt mine. That was the worst part of being Weird Blood. You recognized your kind instantly, but so did they. With most of the magical I'd run into, there'd been an unspoken agreement. I didn't call attention to their magic, and they returned the favor. Only a fool would overlook the fact that if you turned someone in for a quick coin, they could turn around and point the finger right back at you. Then there were the meetings that went badly, where the magic didn't get along, even when there was no animosity between the two Weird Bloods. I'd had a few of those run-ins and didn't like to think of them, or how they'd ended. Point was, if you were Weird Blood and in the ruined city, you didn't want to be found by anybody. Not that the ruined city was safe. Every now and then, some lord would remember there were people here and send out one of our own to see if they could turn up a Weird Blood. Usually I knew when they were coming because of the lookout stationed along the roads that charged the smaller crews for information. But even with a heads up, if you had the curse of magic in your blood, nowhere was truly safe. Except if you were Loretta. She sat behind her table, thick black hair piled high, dark almond eyes that read you as soon as they landed on you. If you were willing to part with a coin or had something to trade, she might even tell you what she saw. Even if I had coin, I wasn't willing. I knew what my future held. I'd die in the ruined city and I'd be happy for it. Everyone in the area knew Loretta had worked out some sort of deal with the lords and ladies who ruled it. It was obvious how they always stopped by this place, and yet she always remained. Nothing was ever carried out or smashed. None of her people ever dragged away to fight a war. Maybe it was her rare gift of sight that kept her safe. The details could only be guessed at, and I was fine with not knowing. Sticking your nose in other people's business was the quickest way to get your head lopped off, and most people didn't live too long to begin with. Knowledge could be a 2-ton stone tied to your ankle in the ocean. She waved a hand over her table.
"Let's see what you have."
I turned my sack over and let all the things I'd managed to gather along the border of the ruined forest land in a heap on the table in front of Loretta. I used to try and pull out each item separately, one after another, laying them in front of her as if each were priceless. It never fooled her. The only reason they were worth anything at all was most people around here wouldn't even get that close to the ruined forest. If they did, they wouldn't be able to sense what was magical. But I could sense the items and had a hungry crew. Her hands skimmed the items. I'd known she was going to find them lacking before I saw her expression. I'd brought her Gritung feathers last week, and I knew their uses were limited to healing minor scrapes and wounds. The bones of Rotti were only useful if you wanted to put someone to sleep for days. She picked up one of the bones, held it, and then let it drop to the table.
"I already have these in abundance. You know that. You brought me most of them."
She leaned back in her chair, crossed her arms over her generous chest, and waited for me to speak, as if I owed her an explanation. "They're still worth something." She knew it wasn't that easy to find these things. The edges of the ruined forest were limited. The truly scary beasts resided deep in the heart of the forest where no one wanted to go, not even the lords and certainly not me. The ruined forest had been at the heart of the magical war of 810. All that magic flying around had done crazy things to the forest and all the things living in it.
"So are the piles I already have that'll take me years to use up."
She shrugged while she shook her head before she leaned forward. We both knew what was coming next.
"Life would be much easier for you if you came to work for me."
Death by starvation would be preferable to being part of her crew, but I couldn't afford to make her an enemy. "Other than bringing you items that you don't need, I'm not sure what good I would do for you." She smiled.
"I bet you could do plenty. Remember, just as you feel it in me, I feel it flowing within you."
I nodded, hoping that after she was done she'd offer me something for what I'd brought her as she had every other time she'd complained in the past. She didn't. It was amazing how long 20 seconds of silence could be in the wrong moments. "I'll try to get you something better soon." I opened my sack and swept all the items off the table, testing her bluff. She didn't budge from her spot. I threw the sack over my shoulder, preparing to leave. Went as far as walking out the door, before I realized I'd been the only one bluffing in the room. I stopped in the hallway, not wanting to get too far too quickly in case she called me back in. I got to the top of the stairs and paused. There was no call. The feeling of the wrapped claw pressed into my skin where I had tucked it in my waistband. I'd found it a few days ago and had kept it hidden, even from my crew. This was something I knew Loretta would want, but if I gave it to her, she'd know just how much magic I was hiding. That was the catch with feeling magic. You could only feel as much as you had yourself, whether the magic came from another weird blood or a magical object. If I admitted to having this, she'd know how much I had. I couldn't pretend anymore. This was a conscious choice to show my hand, and any weird blood who wanted to stay free knew that you hid your magic as much as possible. It had been a risk walking in here with a claw on me, but she hadn't sensed it. Now, I either turned back and handed it to her, or I walked home with nothing, to 5 hungry sets of eyes. They hadn't eaten a decent meal in weeks. If I didn't take the risk, somebody was going to get sick soon. I'd seen it happen before. You went too long without a solid meal and the cold and wet found its way into your bones. I'd already heard Mara coughing. I knew what would come next. I'd watched it play out to its bitter end before. My crew needed to eat. If it kept us alive, I had to gamble. I turned around and walked back in. Loretta lifted her head.
I thought we were finished.
I reached into my shirt and withdrew the dragon claw, knowing she'd been around enough to recognize it, even if she couldn't feel it. There was no faking a dragon claw with its black glass appearance. It was said that if you filed the claw into a dust, mixed it with wine, and drank it, you could breathe fire for a week. It wasn't something I could use, but with Loretta's connections, she could surely sell it for a pretty coin. I didn't care who she sold it to as long as I was paid, and those people didn't come looking for the person who'd found it. That was the biggest risk here. Would it be worth it to her to sell me out for the price she'd get? Or would she keep quiet, hoping to get more like this? Loretta's eyes narrowed and then shot to my face. I'd never seen her speechless before. I know what it's worth. I want a full jar of holly honey. It was a bargain for her and salvation for me. Holly honey didn't taste anything like bee honey, but a couple of spoons could get you by for a day, if you could hold it down anyways. Loretta didn't argue. She stood and turned, walking over to a door behind her and pulling back the cloth that covered it. I leaned over, trying to catch a glimpse as the fabric fluttered. What I wouldn't do to get in that room for a few minutes alone. But I wouldn't risk stealing from Loretta. Since I'd known her, only one person had dared. A kid named Tweed who'd wandered into the area shortly after I'd arrived myself. He'd been the lazy sort, always looking for handouts. None of the crews would take him in, seeing him as dead weight. Then, one night, there were screams so loud that everyone in the city heard them. I'd made a move to go look and see what was happening when Ruck laid a hand on my shoulder. His face somber in the moonlight, he shook his head before returning back to his sleep spot. The message was clear. That was when I'd learned what survival really cost. Standing back and letting others die so that you and your crew made it another day. I often wondered if I'd sold another chunk of my soul that night. No one ever saw Tweed again, but there were rumors he'd tried to steal from Loretta. Loretta walked back in the room with a jar of holly honey in her hand. I placed the dragon's claw on the table. She held the jar out to me. The memory of Tweed reminded me of whose hand was feeding me. I took the jar with a nod, my fingers grazing hers as I did. Her other hand shot out and grabbed my wrist, her eyes going unfocused. This had happened before, so I knew it was her gift of sight. Unfortunately, I never liked what she saw, and I doubted this time would prove different. I hated when she did this. I knew sight was one of her gifts, but it freaked me out on a very basic level. No one.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?